the Story Embers podcast, a podcast dedicated to guiding and inspiring Christian storytellers to glorify God with excellent craftsmanship. I'm your host, Grace Livingston, and welcome to episode 43, portraying doubting or deconstructing Christians in stories. I'm Grace Livingston.
I'm Josiah DeGraff.
I'm Dennis Lamb.
I'm Rose Scheffler.
And I'm Martin Detweiler.
And today we're taking a look at characters that struggle with doubts about their faith or are seeking to deconstruct their faith. We're also welcoming two new panelists, our phenomenal staff writers Rose Scheffler and Martin Detweiler. I am so jazzed to introduce them all to you. They have some truly great insights. Be sure to check out their writing on our website. They both have so many helpful articles talking about all sorts of writer topics. And of course, you can get to know them more at storyembers.org/about. And one last message before we dive into today's topic. This episode is sponsored by the School of Kingdom Writers, a full-time training program for Christian writers who are serious about creating amazing media and reaching large audiences with their work. Aspiring novelists are encouraged to apply. Learn more and join the movement at sokw.org or through the link in this episode's show notes. And stay tuned to hear from Brad Pocket, director of the School of Kingdom Writers, in this episode's Midpoint Break. Okay, back to today's episode. We're tackling the portrayal of doubting characters and characters who are trying to deconstruct their faith. Now, for anyone who may be unfamiliar with the term, deconstruction in the context that we're going to be talking about, it typically refers to the questioning or re-examining of Christian beliefs that sometimes leads to a person finding new insights into their faith, or maybe they change denominations with their beliefs, or in some cases, there is a rejection of the Christian faith as a whole. Of course, deconstruction is just kind of this new term being used to describe something that people have really been doing since, well, forever, and that's doubting, questioning, and diving deeper into their beliefs. Today, we're going to talk about the representation of characters who are walking through a doubting season in their faith life or who are seeking to deconstruct their faith. I'm going to open us up with a broad question. Do you all think it's important to portray characters facing these sort of challenges in stories? Martin, I'm going to have you lead us out here. What do you think?
I think it depends on the story you want to tell. If you want to take your character through a life-transforming character arc, deconstructing their belief system is probably the easiest way you can do that. And that doesn't even have to be Christian faith in particular, but like any kind of belief system, if you deconstruct that, it's like a really powerful way to take your character on a pretty existentially harrowing journey of change, because we don't particularly like going through changes like that. We have to rethink everything about who we are. You know, an object at rest tends to stay at rest. Even if you just take the first steps into doubt, people understand that if these doubts turn out to be true, or if these questions, if I can't answer these questions, that will domino into something bigger. So even just the threat of that deconstruction with doubt, the beginning stages, is going to be incredibly tense for that character. So it's a really powerful way to introduce tension in the character. And it's not just tension of their situation, it's something inherent to who they are and their process of change and where they are in their life state. And I wouldn't say it's necessary, but it's a really good way to introduce a lot of tension and to really kind of supercharge your character's arc.
I think deconstruction ought to be done, and here's why. Because I think that it happens to people and it takes them, like in the real world, it blindsides them when it happens because they've never experienced anything like that ever. And one of the beautiful things about fiction is that it allows you to live 1,000 lives and imagine yourself in that without actually having to go through it. And I would almost say that if you have never truly, if you've been taught, and I've met people like this, and I think that I even embodied some of this, it's like that questions were bad, that questioning the fact that what if Jesus didn't die on the cross was actually evil and a sin. Now, I think that God is big enough for questions. He's big enough for a lot of them. And I think that the answers are there. And I think if someone is honest with themselves, and I think if you can portray that in a character, honestly, like, really seeking the truth, not just deconstructing something just to rebel and like raise a fist to the sky and say, you know, I'm going to do what I want. But really the seeking of truth, that action of seeking of truth, of questioning and really considering, like, why do I live like this, can allow a reader to then walk that journey with a character, but in a measure of safety that allows them to perhaps do some of that on their own, especially if what you choose to do is end that arc in a positive place. And I think that more people need to think deeply about their lives. And I think that's why deconstruction happens, is because they don't. And I think that fiction can be part of the answer to that.
Yeah, I would definitely sign on to everything that's been said so far, particularly what you were saying, Rose, about the ways in which fiction can prepare people for the challenges that they're faced later on down the road. Perhaps deconstruction wouldn't be the one for me. There are many things I can think back on that, what prepared me to handle this challenge in my life? Well, there are many things, but one of those things was the different fictional works I'd read about that issue that made me ready for that moment. And living in a current environment as we are, where people, quote unquote, deconstructing their faith can get, a lot of views and followers and popularity and get a lot of conversations going. We need to think robustly about this topic of, how do we work through the things that we doubt in healthy ways, and how do we seek the truth? And I think that whether or not the stories are using these terms or not, stories that deal meaningfully with doubt are so important if we're going to be able to think well about the world we actually live in.
Another reason to write deconstructing characters, if that's the right term, is just because they are really epic. I never really quite realized this till now, but I actually just wrote two myself recently in Song Killer Symphony. One of them is partly just his personality, but he's so fun to write that story for him. And the struggle he goes through, it can add up a level of serious tone to the story, but it can also add some humorous moments. It's just a really raw part of a character's soul. So I think you feel kind of invited into the story in a way you might not otherwise with a character who's that vulnerable.
Something that you said earlier, Rose, really stuck with me. You mentioned something about the search for truth. And I think just in combination with what everyone else has said, building off of it, throwing a character through an arc where their belief system is deconstructed forces the reader to go along with the character as they search for truth. And that is one of the, that's one of the most important things that can be true of us, is that we seek after the truth. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be answered to you. There's biblical principles behind that being a very, very important good thing, is that we need to be seeking the truth. And if we can portray an authentic character who's undergoing a deconstruction of the beliefs, then we're kind of throwing our readers right into the middle of that same search for truth. And I think that's a really important thing.
Those are all really great thoughts. I feel like portraying deconstruction in stories can be so powerful, not only for the reasons you all have mentioned so far, of course, but also just because the form of storytelling itself on a macro scale lends itself so well to the heart behind honest deconstruction, I think, seeking the truth, re-examining how you live, because most stories boil down are you start with a lie, or maybe you start with a skewed version of the truth. And as the character progresses, the truth becomes uncovered until it's front and center there in the climax. And this isn't absolutely universal, since some story arcs or genres as a whole maybe don't rely on this formula as much, but coming-of-age stories? I mean, a huge percentage of stories have a coming-of-age structure, because that really unique experience of coming out into the world and having to become your own person and re-examine beliefs that maybe you only held on to because you were told or because you only saw them from a child's perspective, a lot of people really relate to that kind of story. And I think that's really interesting to me, because it mimics that model of deconstruction. To me, it almost looks like deconstruction is baked into storytelling as a whole.
In addition to coming-of-age stories, a lot of the Russian authors really did personal deconstruction really well. And in some of the books, like I'm thinking of War and Peace, characters will go through multiple deconstructions and arrive at different worldviews over the course of the whole thing. It's really fascinating.
I think that's what makes the Russians so powerful, is their ability to show you not just one perspective at the end, but multitudinous. Like you got the four brothers, K. Karamazov, and at the end, you have all four of them, and he's taken us on this journey where he is like, they dig into your soul, they pull out the nastiest stuff, and then they just let you stew in it for a while. And I think that is a powerful, powerful tool. And to anybody who's listening that's like, yeah, I want to get into deconstruction, just go read the Russians. Start there. See what they do. Because I think Martin is right. They give you not only one perspective, but many different conclusions and many different layers of that journey.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I just recently over the summer read through Anna Karenina, and you can definitely see that throughout that novel. You have several characters who at the beginning are, or at least outwardly hold to some form of Christianity, who, one of them deconstructs it to the point of, I would argue really losing a meaningful faith by the end of the story. Another deconstructs it, and it's a very subtle deconstruction and reconstruction of his faith, but I think you can see both in it, along with people who perhaps previously deconstructed their faith who are reconstructing it over the course of the story. I think there's a lot of writers who toward the end of the 19th century were really grappling rather meaningfully with this in the face of the nihilistic philosophy that was sweeping Russia at the time. And have left us with really good thoughts for ourselves as Christians and really good examples for us as fiction writers on how to portray the process of doubting and working through our beliefs in a realistic and meaningful way.
I just wanted to add that the power of the Russian novelists actually comes from their beards.
As a beard-having jewel, I like that conclusion.
I'm the only person on this panel besides Gracie who cannot grow a beard, so I feel a little called out.
We'll give you a pass.
What do you guys think are some common triggers for doubts in real life that authors should be aware of when trying to portray these struggles in fiction?
I mean, I think one common trigger for doubt in real life is suffering. When we go through difficult times, that can often cause us to doubt, do I really believe this when things are going poorly, right? Anyone's going to believe something when things are working well for them, but when things are going poorly, we tend to go through periods of doubt of why am I in this mess and am I believing the wrong things. I think, one of the catches to keep in mind here is I think this can be overplayed, right? I've read too many works of Christian fiction, too many Christian films where it becomes clear that the atheist's only reason for not believing in God is, I lost my mom, or I lost my wife, or I lost my father. It's like, well, and you just see that again and again and again, and that's all it is. And are there people in real life who are like that? Well, sure. I knew a guy who, I would say that was probably, a major reason. But, most people, there's more to it than just that. The guy I knew in my life who I thought that was a lot of the reason why he struggled and wasn't believing Christ, I think that was there. There were also a lot of other reasons and experiences that he hadn't. So while I think that's true, I also think we need to be careful not to present doubt as being one-dimensional of, aha, this is the one reason why you're doubting. Well, no, human beings are more complicated than that. And oftentimes the reason why we wrestle with doubts can't be neatly synthesized into one little thing.
To add to what Josiah just said, I heartily agree. I often think that moments of difficulty and suffering and often what seems to be senseless heartache is the tipping point that tips the scale over. So it's the catalyst. It's not the entirety, not the whole cause, not for everyone. I think that it can do that for some people. Famously, C.S. Lewis wrestled very much with his faith when his wife died. C.S. Lewis, the man who is like the 20th century apologist of the year. He wrestled with that, and that is a very specific case, but I think that often like suffering tips over a life that already might have doubts underneath the surface, or perhaps that it's just built on a very shallow understanding of what they believe in anyway. So I think if you're writing a character that's going to be tipped by something, that you need to understand and dig in, like where are the other pockets and rotten like instability in their life that is going to make this a tipping point. Don't make it Because I do think, Josiah, that the "my dad died when I was five," that while very powerful, is the is another 2x4 that you just whack someone over the head with. And I'm like, okay, your father died and I really want to empathize with you, but why is it always that? You know, I always have that question, like, why is it always someone dying? And obviously it's very important because death is very tragic, but it can get cliche. And I think when you beat something over the head too often, you take away the power of that picture in the end.
We'll be right back after this break.
You know, in the first century, Jesus's teachings were shocking and offensive to most of his listeners. Yet our Christian media today is weak, cheesy, and watered down. My name is Brad Paquette. I'm the director of the School of Kingdom Writers. Now tell me, are you ready to break the mold and move beyond conventional Christian fiction? Are you ready to challenge American readers? If you are, then I want to work with you. The School of Kingdom Writers is now enrolling for our 2021 full-time class, which starts this September. You can learn more at sokw.org/students. Now, if you're serious about writing professionally, this is the fastest track. You'll learn how to write stories that capture your reader's attention. You'll learn how to leverage the publishing and media markets. And you'll learn to hear the voice of the Holy Spirit. I think it's time for Christian media to get loud. I think it's time for you to get noticed. Check it out and join the movement at sokw.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to our discussion on portraying deconstructing Christians in fiction. Just before the break, Josiah and Rose offered their thoughts on what are some common triggers for doubts that they've seen in real life, and they shared some tips on how authors can portray those specific situations more realistically and honestly. Now I'm going to pose the same question to Deus and Martin. And Deus, I'll have you go first. What are some common triggers for doubts in real life that you think authors should be aware of when portraying doubting Christians or Christians seeking to deconstruct their faith?
One other cause of deconstruction I think I've seen is people experiencing hypocrisy, especially like in the church, like if there's spiritual leaders, if a pastor, someone was under a big sin issue comes out with that pastor, or they're very maybe manipulative, controlling behind the scenes, things like that. Then people quite naturally go, well, hey, you know, tree is known by its fruits. I'm not seeing good fruit, so I'm just going to judge the tree by that. That's good reasoning, honestly. You also find great fruit other places.
I love both of those examples. I have a little bit of a different take on this. It's a little bit more philosophical or existential, but it's a trigger that I have come in contact with in my own life, my friend circle. It takes a little bit of intro. So a big part of our faith, right, is believing certain things to be true. And behind that is the question, well, how do I know my belief is justified? And there's a lot of evidential arguments we can make. And most of them appeal to our intelligence or our minds. They're either, you know, arguments for the existence of God or for the validity and trustworthiness of the scriptures. And there's more. But when we ask the question of that, how do I know that my belief is justified? There's only one real answer that appeals to our hearts. And that is, well, I've experienced it. You know, I've experienced God helping me, being with me, and more. And so, like, if you take all the mental arguments away, a lot of the time we do kind of fall back on some of our inexperiential confidence that we believe what we believe because we have in some way experienced God. Now, that's not doubt. That's pretty strong belief. But what happens when you come across somebody who has the same existential confidence in their religion and their religion is completely different? It can be that you're seeing your own confidence reflected in somebody else, but it's somebody from a different faith. And it's really disorienting to have that kind of confidence bounced back at you because you see yourself in it because they have the same kind of existential confidence. And yet they're utterly different because their belief system, their religion is just completely different. And so that can really rock, it can really rock your boat because you take away all the logical arguments, right? Well, and then you fall back on the heart argument. Well, I've experienced it. And then now you encounter somebody else who has that same confidence and you're like, well, where do I fall back on now? And I think the solution to that, and this is getting a little long still, but, is that our faith isn't simply experiential, but it's based on logos, the word, which is objective fact. And while all our experience is always going to be subjective, there's still a real world outside of ourselves. There's objective truth outside of us that exists long before we did. And so if we believe in a loving God, we can safely say that he's provided a way out of this objective prison to access objective truth, which is himself. And that he's created a way to become connected to that, to himself. You know, that belief is what's going to kind of combat that kind of doubt. I don't know how to portray that level of like psychology in a story, but I think it's important that this is one of the triggers, especially in postmodern era, particularly, is that Christians come across people with the same level of existential confidence, and they don't know quite what to do with that, because they see their own confidence in it. And it kind of poses the question, well, on what basis do I believe that I'm right and they're wrong? It's just a really in-depth thing, but it's kind of behind a lot of other doubts and stuff that can kind of bring the whole thing tumbling down.
That was actually really enlightening, Martin. You made me realize something about what makes people doubt. Sometimes we think, it's the trauma of the losing the mother, whatever it is, makes them doubt. Or maybe some people like to present themselves as being like, oh, no, I only reason I doubt is because of X, Y, and Z reasons. And I'll point you to the textbooks and the sources for those. But I think as humans, we can't divide ourselves into just logical or just emotional. You know, you may think you have great reasons not to believe in Christianity, but I think you probably still will, or at least be not sure what to believe if you have really strong, unchallenged emotional reasons and experiential reasons to believe. I think we need to show both sides of a coin. Some people will be a little bit more one side, one more the other, but I don't think we're telling the whole story if we are just solely focused on emotion or solely focused on all the facts. I also really like that you brought up kind of the more intellectual side. Our points so far have been more about the emotional reasons people doubt, but I don't think ultimately that the facts point against Christianity, but I do think there are some facts that might be challenging or some interpretations of facts that might seem very appealing, at least at a first glance. And I want to make sure in my own writing that if I present a character like that, that intellectuals who are reading the book aren't going to be like, oh, another one of these characters who's just doubting because of trauma, blah, blah, blah. Like, I want to give them reasons that would almost convince myself to not believe in God or some other essential truth of Christianity. I want to give really convincing reasons, so much that I almost doubt. I want to do the best job I can to present doubt.
To add a layer to what you're saying, Deus, not just to the logical reasons and the emotional reasons, there's often a deeper layer that's it's pretty selfish, as people like having a reason to do what they want to do. And if that means deconstructing a worldview that says you may or may not, then they will be highly motivated. What's really interesting about this motivation is they can hide it from themselves, but you can reveal it to the audience very subtly, I think. And you can see people do this. They are presenting what might seem like really intellectual or really powerfully emotional reasons, but on the side, they have this other reason. You're like, you just want to do this thing, or you don't want to do this thing. And you feel as if you step away from this set of beliefs, then you can do this, or you cannot do that thing that you didn't want to do anyway. And then you feel better about yourself. The human brain is really excellent at setting things up so that we're in the least amount of discomfort. And if we feel we have a duty, or we feel we ought to exercise some restraint, if we can let ourselves off the hook a little bit, it makes us more comfortable. And I do think, while not as powerful as Martin's example or Josiah's example or Deus's example, I think it is another layer of why people engage in the deconstruction of their belief system, particularly Christianity, because there's some pretty powerful thou shalts and thou shalt nots. And sometimes people don't like those.
That does make me wonder, though, Rose. That sounds like the most challenging part of this to represent in fiction. Because on the one hand, it's so true, and we want to represent everything that's true. But on the other hand, I would feel some tension there. Like, I don't want it to make it seem like, oh, I've got this character who's got this convincing emotional and convincing logical reason to deconstruct, but aha, I caught them red-handed, having the real reason behind this being that they want to get away with living how they want to live. And so now we can just ignore the emotional and logical reasons for their deconstruction, which you don't want to do. You want to, like,
it's a both and.
Yeah,
it's a both and. You can't do one or the other, because then you go into caricature, and you cannot do, because people are, like Josiah said, we're so complex. We are, and we do all these little mind games.
Can anybody maybe think of like a character in fiction who's had, like, you really feel like, man, I want to hear their challenges. Those are really interesting. I want to keep hearing more about those, but also I can still see some subtle signs of them just kind of really wanting to be separated from God and not have anything to do with him.
Well, I mean, so not to turn this into the Russian literature podcast, but you know, to go back to Anna Karenina, you know, I don't think it's much of a spoiler of the 150-year-old book to say that, you know, a lot of the book is about the protagonist, Anna Karenina, going off with this adulterous affair with this other guy. And, you know, on the one hand, she has some rational reasons in that she is wrestling with what does it mean to love a husband who just doesn't really care about me and just wants to, is just consumed with the externals, okay? And that is not an easy question to answer, right? You know, she's wrestling with why is it that Christianity, you know, you shouldn't pursue easy divorce. You know, what does it mean to be a good and faithful wife, you know, when my husband is like this, right? And so she has these different rational arguments she's dealing with. And yet on the other hand, you know, what's a catalyst? Well, there's a guy she loves, and that, you know, ends up becoming the catalyst and gives your hands and feet to what had originally just been intellectual doubts. And so there's multiple things going on there. So that is one that sprung to my mind. The other thing I was thinking about, the general question of how do you portray both, is, you know, one of the things I'm a firm believer of is if you want to explore a theme in the story, don't explore it just through one character. Because I think it's going to be so, so hard to avoid doing these things if you're trying to put this whole complex human experience, it's so varied and diverse and multifaceted, all into a single human being. You know, I think that exploring it through multiple different characters, you know, maybe you have one character who's like, yeah, I'm abandoning Christianity because I want to, you know, I want to just go sin some more. And then have another character who's primarily wrestling with intellectual doubts. Although, you know, and another who's primarily there's a lot of emotional doubts. And again, you don't want to have it so clean cut, you know, because we're multifaceted beings, and you know, there's going to be some desires, some emotions, some intellectual wrestlings that all of these characters are doing with. But I think it's really important to not put all of your thematic eggs in one basket, because if you are relying on one character to portray a significant theme, I think you're going to very easily find yourself simplifying the whole thing if you're trying to do it through one person as opposed to many.
I think that Jane Austen does this really well with her book Persuasion. I think it's her best novel because she looks at what that theme means from many, many different, all the different characters. If you go and look and read that book and look for it, and all the characters, it's like she set her theme down in the middle, and then she's put this audience and a 360 around it, and you go around and you just experience what persuasion is. What does it mean? Should you do it? When should you do it? When should you not do it? Should you be persuaded? Should you try to persuade from all of these different ways? And I think that Josiah is right. You have to have multiple characters in order to really dig down into a theme and bring it to its fullness. And I think that they will arrive at different conclusions because humans are not robots. Just as an aside, if no one knew that, now you know.
I've learned new things on this podcast.
You're welcome. You're very welcome, Josiah. I'll be here all week.
Anyone have any last thoughts on how to accurately portray a deconstructing character? Yeah, Dace.
Maybe I could just mention one thing I've noticed with maybe a couple people I've seen who I guess you could say they might have deconstructed. There's an interesting phenomenon I've seen time and again. Time again is in out of like two or three examples, but it was consistent. Is that kind of right before they make their breakaway from Christianity, in specific here, it's almost the way they appear, it almost reminds you of like someone who's just been born again. Like they seem to have this mode of like this great change right before they break away, they abandon everything. It could be like when they break away and abandon everything, it's like everything is new and fresh. They seem much more like manly, more womanly, more alive and connected with the world. Now, often that doesn't last very long and just kind of become kind of like how they used to be or normal person after that. But you might expect this transition to be, I don't know, maybe depressing or really aggravating, tough. In many ways, I'm sure it is. But I think I've heard people talk about this, that when they do break away, there's an incredible feeling of release. And I think that's something of what's going on in the examples I've seen, that they don't feel like they have to be a lie anymore if they feel like they've been kind of presenting a lie. I don't know what else is going inside their brain, but I just see there are these very concrete, repeated kind of stages they go through. And it really shows in their emotions, in their demeanor, in their face, etc.
I think to tie into that, on top of that, a mistake that a lot of Christian storytellers often make is to go beyond reality a little bit. And if a character falls away from the faith or deconstructs their faith, that they just no longer follow any kind of moral framework. And I think that's fundamentally unrealistic, because humans kind of have to exist with a moral framework, and their new one is not going to be the same as Christian morality, and it's probably going to be inconsistent in some areas, but it's still going to be there, because if they didn't have one, they'd be a sociopath. That's what it means if someone doesn't have a conscience. So I think if, as Christian writers, if we're taking a character out of the faith and showing that process of deconstruction, we have to be realistic and not just have them lose all of their moral boundaries.
Just to add a little bit to what Martin said, I know this is getting long, but just because someone loses their faith, they're not evil. I think that if a pitfall could be to condemn rather than empathize, or at least show, have some compassion in the narrative tone of how you portray that. Because if you leave someone in, it's a horrible thing to lose your faith. And I've seen it happen to people. And yes, there are people who are very happy Deus, and you're right. And that is something that could be shown. But at the same time, they're not caricatures of evil simply because they've walked through this horrific valley and they didn't make it out on the other side. And who's to say that that dark moment of the soul will not have a hopeful ending in the end? Because God plays a very long game. So my brief advice would be, remember that they are human and have compassion and don't condemn in the end, just because you leave it at a dark moment.
My last question for you all today, how do you think Christian storytellers should decide when a character should depart the faith and stay there, or when they should come back to it?
My answer to this question actually ties into something we were talking about earlier when we mentioned having the whole cast of characters interact with the same theme. One factor that's kind of deciding factor for me is if we have a character that departs from the faith, it needs to be part of a larger cast of characters who interact with a lot of the same questions or doubts and don't come out with the same end result. So that way the reader has a lot of different touchstones where they can just kind of come through the experience of multiple characters dealing with the same similar issues, at least definitely the same theme, and begin to understand it from different perspectives. And one of those may well be somebody who leaves the faith and never does come back to it. And I think that's an important part of that decision-making process.
I think it could be really powerful to write a character who loves the truth enough to abandon what they find to be false, even if they're wrong. I think that can have a really powerful effect. I think it should be done with care, and I'm not quite brave enough to do it myself yet, and I'm not quite talented enough yet, but I think that there could be someone out there who could pull that off brilliantly and really write a powerful story, because I think the pursuit of truth is so important.
I think one of the most important things we can do when figuring out where to take deconstructing characters is to start by simply respecting the character. While, you know, we do want to balance our, you know, we do need to work on bringing our characters and our plot and our theme to the place that makes the most sense, you know, we need to think carefully about, well, where is this character actually, and not railroad them into any destination that isn't where they would naturally end up given, you know, the place where they're in. I think we need to begin on that ground. I very much agree with Martin that I think, you know, this is one of the places where having a cast of characters becomes important, because if it's just one character, I think the challenge is that I think it's easy for a writer in that situation to think, well, I have to bring them back to, you know, reconstructing their faith and coming and remaining faithful to Christ, because otherwise, if I leave the book with the big deconstructing character, you know, walking away from the faith, you know, am I portraying an anti-Christian message to my readers? You know, on the other hand, if the only character in the book is deconstructing, ends up, you know, reconstructing their faith, you know, the danger is, well, are you just giving it the easy ending, right? The feel-good ending that we all want, but, you know, becomes cliche the more times you do it. And I really think that, you know, if you want to delve into this issue at length, doing it through a cast of characters where you can respect each character's choices and show us the different outcomes really does make this easier. I think it's hard to give a simple answer to this, but the way I would tend to approach this question would be, well, you know, do it through a dynamic cast of characters where you can explore different things and really think through how can I respect this character's and the decisions they're making, and then accurately portray the effects of the decision they end up making and how that turns out for them.
And I think if anyone wants tips to see reconstruction of a character done well, turn to The Promise of Jesse Woods and watch, I believe the main character's name is Matt, watch him grow over the course of the book, because it's really a cool process.
I love that book. And wholeheartedly second that. Also, while we're, you know, if I can do a shameless plug, we did an entire series on The Promise of Jesse Woods. And there will be a link to that in the description because Gracie is awesome. And you should check that series out.
Yep. And once you've read the book, we have a whole podcast episode interviewing the author, Chris Fabry, about the writing process and how the story came to be. So be sure to listen to that if you haven't already. Thanks so much, Josiah, Deus, Rose, and Martin for joining me on today's episode. And thanks to all of you listeners who tuned in. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Special thanks to Renee Kennedy for joining our Patreon supporters for the podcast. And as always, special thanks to Taylor Cloxton and Michael Stanton as well. Want to help us better guide and inspire Christian storytellers? Visit patreon.com/storyembers to become a supporter and get access to exclusive Story Embers updates, swag, and more. Finally, join me again on October 18th as Josiah and I welcome SE staff members Mariposa Aristillo and Lori Scott to discuss children's fiction on the next episode of the Story Embers podcast.
If you didn't do the homework, the first question gives you the basic overview if you're not familiar with.
I did the homework.
Cool. I came here with no idea what our topics were.
Really? Wow.
Dave, it feels so much better. You're like giving such good answers too, man.
Yeah, I was like, normally they send topics, don't they? Did I miss that?
I'm
like,
did I not include? I think I included you on it.
You probably did. I probably was just distracted. La la la.